Right, so my let's start with presenting myself. My name is Johan Söderberg, and I'm interested in, like everyone here, I guess, in the hardware and the possibility of social change to do a really true innovation. Not just technical innovation, but a social and economical one. And I think that one of my guiding, leading theorists sources of inspiration is Herbert Marcuse, who generally is known as a very strong critic of technological rationality, instrumentality. He was a pupil of Heidegger and tried to combine Heidegger with Marx. But then in one of his books, where which has made him famous as a very strong critic of technology, he has one sentence, one statement, which I read many years back and which became very influential to me, where he says that a truly new technology, like not just the next car or whatever, but something in which it would be a really truly new technology, would require a truly new social relation. So he made a kind of connection. This is in the, I think he wrote that book in early in the 60s. So the whole sort of quest is to find not the innovation of a new social relation within we could breed and foster a new technology which could have some kind of impact of that sort. And I was very interested in this, and I was thinking out from a very high theoretical level for many years, and then I realized I have to bring this down and find a concrete example. And I think Ronja is a very interesting case to test this idea, because in this Ronja development, which came from the Czech Wi-Fi community, more or less, there were some real attempts to...
It's okay.
It's okay, yeah, everything is fine. There was a real attempt to develop a hardware according to the same model as free software development. And there has been many such projects, but in most cases they are still on a drawing board. In this case, they were actually building a product which worked. And the confirmation that the product worked was that it was sort of ordered by internet service providers. They were paying students to build this, and the Ronja was used commercially, just like the proof that Linux has been GNU/Linux has been a successful product, you could say, is the fact that this actually has a commercial success, and it's like, and this is, as far as I know, the only equivalent within hardware development. And I might be wrong, but I don't know any others. So what is Ronja then? Ronja stands for Reasonable Optical Near Joint Access. But in fact, the name is taken from a children's book author, a Swedish children's book author, who wrote a story about a rebel or how do you call it? A brigand or outlaw girl who was called Ronja. So that's where it comes from. And what you see here is basically a Ronja link at a distance in at night, and it's using visible red light. There were also a model using infrared light, which you would not see them. But most cases, it will look like this if you stand in the opposite side of the actual link. And now they are in disorder. What you see here is, let's see the early beginning of the Wi-Fi community, because the Ronja is very much, the Ronja project was very much sort of grown out of the Wi-Fi community, which started to spread in around 2000 when people took equipment, which originally had been intended to be sold to companies and had been intended to be used indoors for fairs and these kind of settings. And communities, I guess quite a few of you are familiar with this, but some people started to develop equipment so that the Wi-Fi could be used on a longer distance and could actually be set up community networks. And this was one early model of an antenna, which at one point in time was a pineapple can. And it was used to direct the signal and thereby make it possible to send Wi-Fi communication in I knew it worked, but the Wi-Fi had many troubles, especially in the beginning. It was fairly slow. It was susceptible to crowding when more antennas were set up, and there were other technical things which made it quite limited technology. Also, another factor was that it was very expensive and very hard to find, especially in the Czech Republic. So there was a huge demand for getting internet access, and it was not provided for there by the commercial developers or by the state. It was run by a state company which formerly had been a communist, run the telecom industry. And they had no interest to move from dial-up, like the old kind of modems for phone modems, where they had a charge per fee and so on. So there was a very strong embedded interest in sticking with old technology. So this created the idea of first of setting up these networks and then of building a Ronja. And here you see the machine at the point-blank range. Basically what it consists of is two pipes. In the beginning there were two metal pipes taken from chimneys. And in one of the pipe you put a diode, a red light diode, usually used for traffic lights controls. And then of course you need electronics. And then you have a lens in both pipes, and the lens is there to concentrate the light and to make it possible to read the light at a long distance. And what you have then is, on the opposite side, this is, I will show you both sides of connection. This is a photo I took in Shrudim, which is a small sized town in the Czech Republic, with 25,000 residents about. And this was used in the local Wi-Fi community there. So they had one, these two pipes pointing from the house roof of this house. And there you see the opposite house, and you can see, though it's very vague, on the grey house in the middle, next to the three windows, there is something, a very weak red point. Maybe you can see it. Yeah? It is, if you cannot, you can see it more clearly here. So these are the two connections, right? And they sat at the distance of, or they sit at the distance of about 800 meters from each other. So the concept is basically that the incoming red light from one of the pipes, it goes into the receiver in the other pipe, and again they pass through one of these lens, and the light is concentrated. And by sending the light, basically, it registers energy, and the energy then is sort of transferred into zeros, ones and zeros, binaries. And you will have a connection which is actually very reliable. It could make 10 megabytes per second transference data. It was also very reliable in relation to all kinds of there were no problem with crowding and collisions and these kind of things which you have in the Wi-Fi in much Wi-Fi technology. And another advantage I found out was that it's full duplex, which means that all the information goes in both directions at the same time, while the Wi-Fi has to wait for signals. And this was a very strong selling argument for people to start to build these machines, because they were mainly used to share files and watch internet and play games, I guess. So this was very useful for that reason, too. Let's see. And here you can see how you could create this kind of, or how you created these kind of nodes where all the links, like in the backbones of the Wi-Fi communities. And then out from those Wi-Fi, the backbones, there would be more Wi-Fi, broadcasting out from the Wi-Fi signals. But these were used as the backbones because they were more reliable and faster. The main drawback is by the optical thing is, of course, that it's very sensitive to fog, to other kinds of mechanical interference. So you have to have a line of sight, of course. And if in case of there is a bad weather condition, you have to prepare for that and have basically have a Wi-Fi antenna in reserve. So this was the drawback. There were many other drawbacks too. But, and here you can see how it looks from behind. This is let's see, this is the sender. So you have the transmitter, so you have the lamp in the middle, and it was basically you had to drill the metal from the metal pipe and do everything inside, and all the components, all of these things you have to solder to the metal and so on. So there's a huge amount of work. Now, so this is a sort of a short overview of what Ronja, how Ronja worked. But what is so interesting with this is that the guy who started it was called Karel Kulhavi, or his handle in this scene is Clock. So I will refer to him as Clock. And Clock, he got this idea around, well, he got the idea earlier, but he released it in 2001. And he got the idea from his family's remote controller for a TV. And he saw, okay, so you can use infrared light to make some communication with the television. So why not use this kind of idea to make communication with my friend who lives across the street and who I can see from my window. And then he started to do these kind of experiments. And in the beginning it was very primitive, of course, but in the end he came up with this design. And when he was doing it, he realized that he had put down so much work in it that he didn't want to keep this for himself, but he wanted it to be useful for others as well. And that was what gave him the idea to publish it under, in the beginning, publish it under GPL documentation license, and involve a community in it. And this is what made me interested in it. The thing is, I have a bit of a disorder in my slides. Let's see. So the idea of this was from the start to that anyone should be able to build Ronja. So he published everything, licensed it, but this wouldn't take him very far because there are many other hurdles before you can actually build a thing. The first of them is knowledge. And I think this is another reason why I think this case raises so many interesting questions if we're interested in this, because the knowledge, question of who has the knowledge is become an immediate barrier to our ambitions of spreading this. And Ronja gives many occasions of how they try to overcome the limit of knowledge and so on. The attempt was basically to publish the instructions for how to build it. And there was a huge amount of work in order to describe how you piece together these individual components, because they are 3D, but you have to describe it in text and you have to illustrate it and so on. And it has to be understood by someone who does not know electronics. He's never used electronics before. That was obvious. And the other thing which problem or kind of challenge which is caused was that you have to choose components which are available. And this is a huge problem because many of these things, which all of these components, maybe I should describe a little bit what they do. The first up there is the sender, and the one there is the receiver. And the receiver, you have a photodiode which you see at the bottom. You can see it sticks out from the box. And then it goes through these various coils and conductors and so on. And the idea there is to reinforce the signal, what is in the beginning a light signal, which is transferred into an electronic signal and later into ones and zeros. And what you have up there is then the sender. So all of this was had to be described in a way that it could be built. And he gave me one nice example of this when I met him. This thing you have in the middle is the coil. It's basically the same coil as you have there in the blue, right? And the thing is that usually you buy these coils, you can buy them quite cheaply. So this was an exception to most other things of electronics. But these things you can actually buy quite cheap, factory made. The problem is when they're factory made, they come with some kind of magnetic force to reinforce the kind of elements of the to make it work as a coil. It's intended to work, but for the transmission, the magnetic force was a real problem. It will cause interference with other things when you receive the signals and so on. So Clock realized that in order to make a self-produced, homemade hardware system for this purpose, he had to design the coil himself. And it was no problem for him, he was an expert in these things. He could easily, he calculated that he needed 36 turns of this copper wire in order to make exact the resistance which he needed in order for to get the signal processed in the way he wanted and so on. But the great challenge was, how does he describe that on the internet or for unknowing people in a way that they can replicate and build exactly the same coil in their homes? And how to do that without just ordering from a factory where everything is ready-made, but actually making each and every attempt by an inexperienced user to come up with a coil which has exactly 36 turns at the same distance. So in this small individual case, the solution was to take a screw, a plastic screw, which I am holding there, and basically count, and you will come up with the right kind of coils. And these sort of individual small design choices had to be made in every little sort of, I don't know how many, but a huge amount of these kind of choices had to be made when constructing these AOR electronics, so that it could be understood and built by ordinary users. Let's see. This is another example. So the lens, because you have commercial versions of free optical, free optics, free space optics. In this case, not free as in freedom, but in free as in free air. But these cost enormous amounts of money, maybe somewhere in the range of 1,000 euros or more. And they use specialized optics, which are produced exactly for the kind of purpose of sending data and so on. And this was not an option, of course, because another limit in addition to knowledge is price. These were meant to be built by people in Czech Republic at around 2000 who were low on money and often students and so on. So you had to find components that were very cheap and available. And this is a magnifying glass which you can find in the Chinese flea market in Prague for about 1 euro. And this is what you take to build Ronja to get the lens for concentrating the light. And you have four of them. You have two in each transmitter and two in each receiver. Which creates fun stories in itself, because the Chinese dealer in these kind of optical glasses suddenly had a huge house of people who came and demanding, because they were usually not building one connection, but they were building a couple, so they could go there and ask for 16 magnifying glasses. And in the end, when people came there, he said, it's that internet project, right? Anyway, so there were all of these kind of decisions. Let's see, okay, now I'm jumping ahead. So this is what makes, there's many more such examples, and all of these ideas were collected under the philosophy of user control. And this was an invention, basically the clock, but if you study the mailing list, it seems that there has been support for that idea with in the community of developers as well. And I think that what's interesting also, that this idea of user control is very similar to ideas which has been discussed here, but it did not grow, at least in the case of clock, as I understand, it did not grow from a theoretical sort of background in a critique of capitalism or anything. But when I put in the quote in the slides, but it fell out because of incompatibility and so on. But basically it says somewhere that his father was buying a printer and it did not work, and he started to think, why does it not work? And from those kind of experiences as an engineer who knows how to fix it, but we are sort of prevented from doing it for other social reasons, as he would see it, or as one could see it, he started to think, why is this? Why am I have the capacities, and still I am prevented from actually fixing what the problem here? And from that grew an idea of the user as the importance of letting the user be in control. And I think this idea is also heavily influenced, or I'm sure it is heavily influenced by the free software idea, which is also about giving the access to the source code as a way of letting the user be in control and the realization that if the user is not in control, someone else will be in control over her through the computer. So this was the idea that that by building it yourself and the kind of transformation which would happen in the inexperienced user by learning and taking charge of the field, of the material which she was working with, she would also sort of get some kind of growth or something like that. But these ideas were quickly challenged because, as I said before, there was a huge demand for these things and people wanted to build many more. I have a, if you close your eyes now, you can see here. So people wanted to build a lot of these constructions, and partly that was just the nature of the fact that you were building a network with it. So you were having one Ronja is completely worthless, and having two can be useful, but you want many. Another reason was basically that all the parts which they took were parts intended to be sold to huge manufacturers and industries, so they were sold in very big, large quantities. And for instance, the light diode, which is of course a very critical component if you want to run it to work, you will need two of them if you want to build one link. And you could only buy them in packages from the US, and they were sold for 120 in each package. So there were huge of these kind of economies of scale which was working against the do-it-yourself philosophy in this kind of take it home and start to build it in your workshop. And this fostered collaboration. So there were, for instance, with the diets, there were one who ordered these packages and just distributed them to the community. And so it fostered a cooperation, but it was also a force which made people want to build many at the same time, and also to save time, because it took a hell of a lot of time to actually build the Ronja. And then there were people who got very engaged and started to develop and wanted to make modifications. And at the same time, there were other people who did not have the skill or the fortitude or the commitment to go in to actually learn these things. But they wanted the internet access. This was the fastest and cheapest way of getting internet access, and they wanted it. So they asked these people who had got engaged and had started to be involved in it to buy it to them for money. And we can say this is sort of the germ form of commercialization of this relation. Very many of the people I talked to built one or two of these and sold them to people, other users. And then there were, of course, some who started to think, how can I build more and make a more sustainable product? They were selling it for about 15,000 Czech krona a piece, which European money is. Wait, let me think. 7,700 euro, maybe, something like that. So they were cost a bit, but they were still a lot cheaper than Wi-Fi technology at that time. And these people started to make modifications so that the ideas which it started with, that anyone would be able to build it and use components which were widely available, sort of came into collision with using components which you could have many of and cheap when you bought in big quantities. The first modification, which became very popular, which you can see here, is basically using it in plastics instead of in metal. And these are sewage pipes instead of the chimney pipes which had been used in metal before. And there were other modifications which I will not go into mechanically, which were made for the same reason, to just make it quicker to build them in larger quantities and sell them. And these were, there were some conflicts around these, but I don't think those modifications were really violating the idea of user control. I think it had more to do with personal quirks, and Clock was quite a known person in some ways. But what did have more to do with the case of user control was this modification. Because one of the first early requirements which came up was that people were really fed up with doing it airwire. That is, if you saw the previous, so if I go back a few, this is the airwire construction. And here you have all the little components. You buy them one piece by piece, and you have to solder them, which is kind of painful, and there is many infinite amounts of occasions for misunderstanding or for things to go wrong. So people wanted them like this instead, where they had most of it ordered from the factory, which could mass produce them. And the problem here, of course, was that you had a huge amount of economy of scale coming in when you wanted to build it in this way, because ordering one or ordering 100 would be about the same very high price. And also it sort of took away some of the idea of self-sufficiency, the fact that, as Koch said to me, there could be a third world and anyone could take their soldering equipment and build their own air wire Ronyam. Well, if you want this, of course you need to have a working factory and all those kinds of things. Basically, the coil there is the same thing as you have in the transmitter you saw before. So and it's based on the same outlay. So Klopp, in the beginning, he resisted this modification, but there was a lot of people who insisted on it. So they took the drawings, and the drawings for how to build it as an airwire construction, and they sort of blue copied it and made it into a printed circuit board instead. And this became very popular because it saved a lot of time and so on. And another interesting factor is that in the end, Klock agreed to go over to printed circuit boards because he realized there was a trade-off. And this again comes in, where does the knowledge kind of make a resistance? Because on the one hand, you had to, if you use this, you had to go into large scale economy. But on the other hand, for inexperienced users who did not know how to, who maybe had not the soldering, never used the soldering equipment and so on, it was a huge hindrance that you had to build it yourself. And then to take it to a printed circuit board was actually something which enabled more inexperienced users to use it. So there was this kind of conflict within the idea of user control. While you both want to reach a lot of people, and you want to stay to the principle of it being self-managed.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you very shortly. How many persons would like to go to dinner this evening with us? Just hands up. 1, 2, 3. Okay, thank you.
Let's see, what have we here? Okay, so I will try to speed up a little bit. Because the interesting thing is the fairy around it, right? These were basically small modifications, but it was still very labor intensive to build them and to charge 700 or euros or 15,000 Czech krona. Still meant very small profit when you built them one by one, and also it was very labor intensive to actually aim them on the roof, and there were a lot of insecurities. So you could not build a stable business model where you couldn't tell a company really that I can ensure you that this will work with in 99% of the cases and charge money for that. So people started to think, how can we change the design more fundamentally in order to cut out the labor who is involved in building it and the kind of the whole amount of effort which goes into produce every single unit, and to produce it so that we can basically send the blue copies to the industry and have it produced for us as a mass manufacturer. And this is one way of interpreting this. It's of course that this is an entrepreneur seeing out the opportunity of making profit. And I think this is part of the truth. But the interesting thing is that the guy who really set off the commercial, who made there were many, many attempts to redesign Ronyam to make it more suitable for mass production and commercial development. But there was one group in Prague who took this further than anyone else. They launched a project called Crusader, where they wanted to refurnish the design to make it go 100 megabytes instead of 10 megabytes, and basically make it possible to produce it without any amateurs being involved. And I met the guy, Landa, who was in charge of the technical development of Crusader. And the interesting thing is that he had also a political vision. He was, on one hand, he was an archetype of the entrepreneur, but he also had this vision of a political cause behind doing this. And I think it's a valid one, because part of the Wi-Fi community, especially in the beginning, the idea was to build an independent network which somehow could be resistant to surveillance and these kind of things from states and governments. And the Wi-Fi technology had proved less than capable of doing that, because in the end you would rely on a backbone which was owned by a company in order to make really fast connections. And the latter guy thought that if one couldn't make the optical connections and make a mass produce them cheaply and spread them in the Wi-Fi communities, it would actually be possible to build a local optical network that would be owned by the users and resistant to surveillance and so forth. And this was prevented, in his opinion, was prevented by the very cumbersome, laborious requirements in order to produce Ronja, which actually put a limit to the spread of the technology. So there was kind of a problem of this hybrid between wanting to take it user control, wanted to be an autonomous force in a sense, and the politicals which is involved in that, and on the other hand relying on commercial to ride on the benefits of taking commercial. And I mean also Ronja, the hardcore airwire construction of Ronja depended upon global markets in these electronic components which you could buy for nothing. So this kind of conflict is from the start too. Basically, this is Crusader. This is what he designed, Lada and other people in Prague. The first one, which you see here with the two pipes, this looks exactly like Ronja. And basically, that was what it was. He took the Ronja, he put in printed circuit boards, he made some changes to make it quicker to produce, and especially quicker to target, which was a major... I won't go into it, but the targeting it is a whole massive process in itself. And this, of course, caused a huge unhappiness within the Ronja community, by Clock, but also by many others, because the design of Ronja had initially been released under GPL, and the demand was basically that if you take this design and build something else and publish it, then that should happen also to the to whatever you produce thereafter. But in fact, as Lada told me, he in the beginning he didn't really care about letting the information free, but there were other people who were also wanting to bring this to market, business competitors, and they took his ideas, and he realized that he, in order to play on the market and to create a successful firm and to get investors engaged and all of these things, he just simply had to start to protect information. There was as he saw it, and I think he's correct, within hardware development there is an absolute conflict between the idea of free information and building a viable profit maximizing business model. So this created this conflict. What you see to the right is the latest version of Crusader. It works at 100 megabytes per second, so it's 10 times faster than Ronja. And it uses laser instead of light. And this is also an interesting case, because in the Ronja development community, there was a continuous development. How do we take this to 100 megabytes? In order to compete with the next generation of commercial Wi-Fi technology, we have to be faster than, or as fast. So we'll come to this sort of reason that they never, as of yet, they have not sort of made this transition from 10 megabytes to 100 megabytes. And technically, just speaking about what is the technical complication, is that the light-emitting diode, the red light which they use, is not capable of sending data to blink in that kind of speed, which is necessary to send 100 megabyte data, while a laser is. So there were discussions, are we going to use the laser in the next generation so we can move to 100? And the reason why they chose not to do it is also very interesting from a philosophical, theoretical point of perspective, because then people say that, well, if we take a laser, we have numerous more complications. You have to aim it with much greater precision for various optical reasons. So you have to make the mechanics and the electronics much more precise. And it's very, very hard to do that, except if you're an expert. So you can't really square that kind of expertise with the idea of user control. Another issue with laser is that if you're not careful, you can be blind if you look into the laser. So you have a whole new range of risks, which also becomes very hard to square with the idea of user control, if you want an ordinary user to use it. And a third element is because all of these technologies relies on mass-produced commercial goods intended for firm customers. So, for instance, people were playing around with laser writers, where you have a laser, to use this laser for developing a 100 megabyte Ronja. And the problem which they ran into was that basically the manufacturers of laser CD writers and CD readers changed the outfit of their equipment maybe once a month or very often anyway. So it's not possible to make a design which is rock solid and to put it on the internet and say you use these components, you put them together like this. Because you have to use components which are fairly stable over time, which also creates another problem. So Ronja could not make the jump, but for the Crusader people there was no problem, because they had no intention to let ordinary users piece together the machine and have them involved in the building process. There was not that requirement, so they could just take specially ordered manufactured pieces, and it could be however dangerous to look into, it doesn't matter, and they could jump straight to 100 megabyte. And the consequence we see here, this is sort of Ronja pieces that have been scrapped. So this was one of my, I spent 5 months in the Czech Republic this autumn, and I hope to be part of building it and to take part of the activity around it. But what happened was that Ronja, there was a huge and very wide activity around it from 2001 to 2005 or 2006. And then the Czech Republic, because previous to that, the state had said you're only allowed to use some frequencies of the Wi-Fi, which was very limited, and it was very basically caused a lot of problems to use that for the Wi-Fi communities. It was slow, so there was a lot of conflicts with the signals. And as long as this was going on, there was a very strong incentive to start to build your own Ronja. But in 2005, the Czech state said that we are now going to use more frequencies for Wi-Fi, and manufacturers in China started to produce, and about a year later, prices were brought down. And now you can buy a faster Wi-Fi connection for the same price as you will have to buy the parts to build Ronja. And you don't need any job, you don't need to build it, you don't need to aim it. And so people started to use Wi-Fi instead. And even people who shared IDs of user control. And they said, yes, if your clock comes up with a 100 megabyte design, then I will start to build it again. Then it becomes alive and new. I haven't even got into the economic model, which is the main of my topic. But anyway, I have to reflect a little bit on this. So there is a kind of a problem, which if we think of this as we want to sort of jump in a new, to jump to a new GPL society or wherever, how to find this nexus between consumer demand or user demand, which was here to get the fast internet connection, first 10 megabyte and then 100 megabyte. And to link that with all the political visions of user control or economic critique and so on against mass production. And in this case, the Ronja got a lot of sort of force by the fact that it both combined a huge demand for internet, which had been denied for a commercial interest. The major internet service providers had no interest to provide this in the beginning. And thus there was a huge reservoir of activity and enthusiasm which it could link into, and link it then to a critique of mass production, and link it to a critique of these commercial forces. But this happened under the protection of the Czech state, which said that mass production in faster Wi-Fi communications is not allowed in the Czech state. And as soon as they sort of lifted this kind of limitation, it became very hard for this community to. Even though we can cherish the idea that people were sharing ideas on communally, and they could involve people from all over the world, and this happened, to keep a pace and actually not just to build a product, but to build a product and to develop it at the same speed as it happening within the commercial. It's just stunning they succeeded with that for 5 years, I think. Well, so this was to give you the background to what I wanted to come down to, but I think there's not so much time. How much time is there? Anyone can tell.
What time should you finish? It's 12:45 now.
Say again?
It's 12:45 now.
12:45, and let's see. I'm sorry for this interruption. 12:45. Okay, so we have a little bit more time.
Johan.
Yes.
What's this? Missiles.
George, you should have.
I'm inexcusable.
You're inexcusable. You will have a private lesson later, okay? Klock. When did this attempt to fork his project and to make a commercial version of it, and not the commercial thing, they were not anti-commercial, but the fact that the commercial forkers did not release the information, that was the main topic of this discord. He got quite upset himself, and he said, I've been designing this, I put in all of this labor and effort and love and so on, and I spread it all for free, and then people just bring it into commercial projects and don't give a shit. And I'm fed up with it, I want something back, at least the cost. But at the same time, he still wanted to stick to the idea of GPL and so on. So he was thinking, how can I sort of square these two impossibles? And then he came up with the idea, which was released on the Awakenix list in 2005, or it was discussed there briefly, where he builds a donation model, where he says, I will have a modification for this. I will announce it, and I will say how much time it took me, how much money I want for each hour to compensate for that, and the material costs. And when I get this amount of money collected, no matter from whom, I don't care, when I have the money, I will release it, and it will be free. Anyone can use it, you can take it, fuck it off in a commercial project if you want anything, but I have the money and I'm fine. And so he released this ID, and he made 4 releases under a period of 2-3 years, I think, where actually he announced improvements of the technology, and there were enough people who were donating money to the project for him to release it under free. And sometimes it was quite a lot. It was around 30,000 Czech krona. So it was a significant amount of money he got. Half of the money was from individuals. Half of the money came from local Wi-Fi community networks, who were now starting to actually make quite a lot of money from their individual subscribers, but who were still formerly non-profits. So they gave money for this. There were almost no companies involved. I mean, I can't say the word. There were no interest from companies, even though companies were actually by now using the Ronja and recruiting students, high school students often, to build them for them and use it commercially. Now, this idea created a lot of inspiration and tension and some discussion on the Awakenix list, as some old-timers here remember. I think that, on the one hand, there was the positive side. This is the one possibility of making a sustainable model where a developer can actually make an income to be free from his job for a longer time, to devote to the technology without breaking the license. Formally, you have GPL in the end. So that's one of the ways of seeing it. The other way of seeing it, which was, I think, Stefan's critique, was that this was sort of to corrupt the GPL and to reintroduce a consumer-user kind of separation between the developer who is receiving the donations and the people who donate money. Here is a lot of things to say, really. I think they were partly true, both of them. Because I have not got into this, but there were many levels within the Ronja community. There were, on one hand, there were the users who had not used electronics before, they wanted the equipment. Some of them actually built the equipment and they were happy and they went off. And I never met them because they were not involved in the thing. And then there were people who got caught, who felt very... There were people who said that when they spent half a year building Ronja and it worked for the first time, it was the most exciting moment in their life. 2 people said that to me. So some people had this sort of huge rush of this, and they got bitten and got involved and started wanting to develop and so on. And the fact is that very many developers ended up being extremely frustrated with the leadership of this project, and that the fact that Clock run this as a one-man project. And some of the responses, now I don't have it in slides, but some of the responses confirms the critique which Stefan made, actually, because someone said there was a discussion on how do we take Ronja to 100 megabytes per second and make it this fast connection. How can we, the community, help you? Someone asked in the list. And the answer the Clock gave was donate money to me so I have more free time and I can spend it on using to develop, basically. And of course, if you use that time to develop, you cannot release it and share that development because he has to keep it so that there will be donations. And so in that sense, even though things were released on the GPL, it is true that this kind of way of reintroducing a John Locke idea of getting back the money for your labor's worth kind of idea was reintroduced in the Ronja project. And I don't know if in the end it made any difference, but it's true anyway. Right, this is where the printer, I had it in RC. So this is how this thinking kind of began. And I don't know, you can read clearly, right? I'll give you a minute to think about it. So basically there is, this starts like a critique of using a machine and a consumer in a sense, but in this it ends up in a critique of the whole commercial capitalist way of being an alienated worker and so on. Now the interesting thing is that this is the quote I got from Lada, the guy who took the commercial version, and I read it so you already get it. You get the job and you end up 8 hours a day and then you travel a quite big amount of time, like to somewhere where you live, and then you don't have friends because all your friends are in some other place, and you pay for whatever to keep you survive, and then you figure out what this world is about. It is about selling your work to those people who can't sell it and make profit on you. I didn't want to let anybody make profit on me because that would make me a slave. This is basically the Lada. Mislik, the guy who developed the Crusader, the commercial fork of Ronja, how he explains it. So both, I would say, this is my conclusion part now, is that both of them are engineers and probably very smart people, sort of reacting to the same kind of alienation in their, they see the frustration of working in a big engineering company, and they have experienced all that, and they want to break out of that kind of alienation. And I would say that Lada Mislik kind of represents how it's then idealized within a number of academic disciplines like innovation studies. That is the entrepreneur who captures the opportunity and sort of creates a firm and becomes successful and so on. But behind that, of course, is how the alienation of our everyday life becomes a productive cog, which sort of makes us to make the individual choices to take things in the commercial way, in this case, to break out of that, to be the most subjugated worker. And when you take that step, you also take choices which goes into the design of the technology. That is, you will not start to produce the coil by taking a plastic screw and turning 36 turns with the copper thread and so on. But you will start sort of to confirm to keep the information about the secret and so on. While Clock's response, his reaction to the fact that he wanted to break out of alienation, was to try to invent another, partly another economic relation, which perhaps could enable another technology from it. Okay, so this is my... I stop there. This is for you, George. And for questions.
How did they resolve the issue of releasing something under an open license and then somebody commercializing it?
Well, they didn't really. I mean, formally the documents were released in this way, and of course the hardware could not be the ideas. But I think to some extent the community fell apart when this happened, because firstly you did not have the legal, like you couldn't rely on copyright to enforce it, so to the extent as you can in software. And the second thing is that you did not have that kind of consensus within the community. I think within the free software community you have a very strong norm that information should be freely shared, and so there is on a community level a force to enforce that kind of behavior on everyone. While in the Ronja project, partly because it was a new thing, and the ideas, by extending the ideas to hardware, they become much more radical. It's not just a question of intellectual property, it's a question of property, basically, as a model of developing things everywhere. And this is, and also the Czech Republic, this is another level which I didn't get into, but to be a leftist in the Czech Republic is a very sad thing to be. So if you want to make any kind of politics, you have to rephrase it so you cannot get associated with any kind of anti-capitalist Soviet Union kind of agenda. So for this reason, there were very little community consensus which could enforce and uphold that kind of requirement. And in the end, the community fell apart. People start to keep things secret. Now there is a lot of development going on in Prague. I interviewed a couple of people who were developing, but they were doing it in secret, and they didn't know what happened elsewhere because everyone was keeping it secret. And
this commercial derivate, I would say, was it also a secret, or was the documentation published in that case?
No, it was well, in to the extent he took everything from Ronja, it was open. But he came to go very far. Someone else took some idea he made for targeting it, and then he started to introduce locks, like a kind of a lock on within the electronics, so that it would not be. I don't exactly know what the technology was, but it was something which is apparently used by commercial hardware developers, so that basically you cannot take it apart without just. It's like if you rob a bank nowadays, you get all the notes in blue ink. Yeah? And he was preparing to send patents and so on. But the thing is that at the same time, he was supporting the free software. So all the software he released for free, and he shared those ideas. But he just did not share that these kind of ideas apply to hardware development, which I think is also comes down to this kind of political analysis of it. But he kept the secret information.
I think part of the problem here is that, as you already said, licenses don't apply to hardware, so everybody can, even if the license is GPL, people can sell the hardware and they are not bound by the license. I talked to Jaco of the Common Card Project yesterday, and they said they had found some license which he thought they could use for hardware, but I'm not sure. They are still evaluating it. I don't know if they have managed to solve this problem. It would be interesting, because I think otherwise it's really a big problem, because this free software relies on GPL idea. People are, they can build it, but they can improve on it, but then they are also giving it back to the community. And if that's not happening, I think what you are mentioning is, if it doesn't happen that way, but if people start to keep it secret, then the community can fall down and fall apart. So the license would be important.
But yes, I agree, but I think the license is, I mean, even in free software, I don't know if the license is the license is the idea which people are organized around, but it still exists the community which has the force often to actually. So and where does that community come from? I think it comes from having formulated a very powerful political social analysis of which people, even if you're a liberal, you define yourself as a nationalist or whatever, you can share that kind of very limited critique of intellectual property. And thus, there is people will enforce that kind of breaking of that norm of not sharing, and trying to create the same kind of consensus in the hardware level. I think it's even harder than create a license which applies to the hardware level.
How much was the community tied up into the idea of free networks and sort of file sharing beyond the internet?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a big part of their community, and is that still in existence?
I think that partly it's hard for me to tell, because I think in the beginning it was a strong idea, and especially to build a surveillance-resistant network was probably a very strong idea. And actually, I have another quote from Lada, the guy who built the commercial Crusader, which is a hugely interesting argument, because he says that the Wi-Fi communities in the Czech Republic, and I think, I don't know, but I think it's the same all over the world, but definitely there is now a huge internal conflict between those who want to stay non-profit and run under a foundation, and those who are taking it as a commercial project. And those who take it as a commercial, he sort of noticed how that became a problem for the other idea, which was to stay independent of surveillance. Because as long as it was a private, non-commercial network, there was no way for the state to know what was happening in the network. But now, when they become registered business entities, they were in surveillance community. So these conflicts were taking place in the Wi-Fi now. As for file sharing, I think file sharing has been a very important reason for. I mean, the politics of file sharing, I think, is really at the core of this, because it's kind of really where opportunism and at the same time as some kind of legitimate political concern overlaps and cancels out each other, and I think this is to a lesser extent true here as well.
And what system did they use for file sharing? That was outside of the internet. Did they have like media servers, or was there anything that they adapted?
I don't think there were anything unifying like that. I mean, because it consisted of, in Prague, you had 250 different networks who are sort of loosely collaborating, and hate each other, I guess, too. So I don't know if there was anything that sort of kept.
Some experiences are useful also if you can draw negative lessons. Mm-hmm. And the experience seems to show clearly that what is possible for digital goods is not possible for material goods. So if we remember the famous discussion about socialism in one country, mm-hmm. Russia, mm-hmm. And the problem is, if you have to deal with material goods which are not freely reproducible, inevitably, sooner or later, you reproduce the capitalist laws. If you cannot make the product free, as you can do with software or any digital good, mm-hmm. At the end, you try to be not to be a slave, but at the end, you become a.
Yeah, you make other slaves.
At the end of most of the conclusions, he's even pushed to block at the beginning, what to make something to open, mm-hmm. And at the end, it's blocking, it's making exactly the contrary of what he wanted to do. And when you show it, at any moment, you see how he's dependent from money, from price, from everything he was fighting against. The fight against capitalism is impossible in the small group. I mean, it's in the material. The internet and free software developed in a worldwide scale was immediately using and sharing, and they had no product. As soon as you arrive to products which are private, which are materials, which are managed in that way, well, you're contaminated, even if you. The only thing you can give here really free is your work. Mm. But all the rest are dependent. It's like chains. Mm. And even if you shake them, the more you shake these chains, the more you are closer. I think it's interesting, but I would say as a negative, as a proof that it's not so.
Yeah, well, the zinc in that pipe has come from a mine where the slaves are working. So, yeah, there is problems now. You need a mine, and you need a foundry, and you need...
Yeah, of course.
Just to produce those materials.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's a deeply sad story because, like, you know, the guy is sort of taking the premise that I think a lot of people have made, whereas, like, well, you know, it's one thing to have, like, free software, but if it's all built upon proprietary hardware, then what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
So he's taking steps to address it,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, ultimately sort of being defeated by people almost within the community as well.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to make it even more sad, he's defeated by the people in the community, and he's enabled by the Czech state, because without the Czech state ban on the welfare community. But I mean, this is really to make ourselves very sad. No, I think that the question is, because of course we will depend on the Chinese workers who make the components and all of these things, and so was Ronja from the start, even as the most sort of user control technology, it relied on it. So I guess what is the key question is how we cannot start from nothing. We have to start from the consumer market and so on, which I think he did in a way. And the question is how much can we take force in the market, in this sense, to create alternative business models like he did, which wasn't, if you want to call it, donation model or what you want. How much can you to some extent, how much do you have to, and how much can you take that force without just reproducing what you are, what you did before? And that's a 1 million question.
Take some time to think about it.
Because
then you're talking about competing, and you're getting into all the language of capitalism, really, aren't you? You've got to compete in the market, and the market dictates what. And it's just this ideology that you have to.
Clock didn't do that,
no.
But he was framed by people who did, so what did it help? I think I would like to say one more thing about this hardware-software thing, because, I mean, in the end, I can't deny the truth of what you're saying, but I also think the kind of the construction of making a very strong separation between software and hardware is at least within the free software scene, it's a way of delimiting politics to say I'm a right wing, I can vote for whatever, and I can support property everywhere except intellectual property, because it's not property, it's a monopoly, and it's something completely separate for all these things, which is technical. And I mean, that is very much part of this construction which the free software, also the free software movement, relies on. And I think in that sense, it's a problem to emphasize the separation between hardware and software, I think. But of course it's there to some extent.
And more or less it's a problem with cooperatives.
Say again?
The history and experience of cooperatives.
Yeah.
Because it started in the 19th century, there were many illusions of it. And what you see, if there have been thousands and thousands of experiences in Spain, guarantees, etc. And the problem is that you can, in the best case, in the most wonderful case, you can keep more or less nice atmosphere inside it.
Yeah.
But at the end, usually what happens in 90% of cases, or it disappears, or it becomes a good capitalist enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we have private property laws and private property from material goods, the cooperatives by law to the same problem.
Mm.
They cannot expand what they try to do. There's a difference with software.
Yeah, true.
Software was so powerful because it's not closed. It's not defending, it's just expanding.
Mm.
Mm.
I wish I could say you're wrong. That's how it is for now. Any more questions? George, did you bring your propaganda?
Yeah, actually I have.
Okay, there is an article which me and Josh wrote for Capital and Class.
I forgot about it, so I will slip my mind completely. I'm just going to leave something like 20 copies on the desk.
Well, if you see the huge population.
I'm going to distribute it. I see about 30 people, so I'm afraid 10 of you are not going to get a copy.
Ten past one.
But I think you need to at least provide it with a prologue. The propaganda.
Yeah, the propaganda, okay.
Since we wrote it.
Yeah, true. So we wrote based on a conference, peer-to-peer conference, which Michel Barnes was involved in. And we tried to make the connection between the labor movement and hackers to see it as a continuation of the struggle of in the factories against the alienated labor, but taken outside the factories.
You have your copy, I think.
No, I didn't have
that. Some bedtime reading. How far do you think localized manufacturing, like fabrication laboratories, can kind of ameliorate the kind of hardware, software problem?
I guess that's what we have to investigate.
Yeah. And the materials we choose, you know, use wood and chuck down your own wood and chisels, and rather than having to invest into stuff to melt metal and. I guess you need it, but...
Yeah. No, I think it's... that's what we all...
That's why we're here.
I could have given you a lot more details.
Have you also looked at other projects? Because I mean, these experiences are interesting, but I think also that they are made. I wouldn't generalize them so much, so probably might be interesting to see as other problems.
Yeah.
If they get the same problems, if they manage to solve these problems, or if they don't even appear, or something like that. Maybe.
Well, if you can point to me a hardware development project which has been used commercially. And I would go and look for it. But
okay, I think about it. First commercial usage, yeah, I think I'm getting some, but
But of course you're right. I mean, what can I? But to me, this was actually a very conscious decision. I wanted to go down and to bring up the empirics and the small grain.
Some deep analysis of.
But there are so few, what I was saying before, there are so few of those cases that you really can't generalize from nothing, really. It's just like that. Yeah.
I'm afraid we should go.
Yeah, I know. So
we have 45 minutes for lunch.
Oh, right, yeah.